It is Monday, April 13th, 2020. This is the Android Central Podcast. My name is Daniel Bader, and we are recording this on a Monday because we are talking about something that is launching on a Tuesday. That is the OnePlus 8 series. The announcement has happened already if you are hearing this. So we are going to run down everything that you need to know about these two new phones and all the accessories that come along with every new OnePlus release. Joining me to talk about them, the man with the phones in New York City, Andrew Martinick. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. And really, you know, what day is it? Doesn't really matter at this point.
That's true. I don't even think, I was like, should I even say the date? Because every date is the same, especially since it's already the middle of April and I have no idea where the month went. So that's how things are.
And also for us, it is kind of important because not only do I have the phones, you have the phones as well. And this means that we've used them for longer up before, you know, putting our foot down on a lot of our opinions and things on them rather than recording this on our normal Thursday.
And joining us as a sounding board, as always, woo-hoo, Jerry Hildenbrand, you are the smarts behind the voices. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and I have never been told that before, so thank you.
You're very welcome. We every time you're not on the show, I get angry emails. So instead of, you know, writing them back, I just relent and bring you back because you're the only reason people still listen to this damn podcast. And that's fine. I'm totally good with that. I think that's probably correct.
It's probably just one angry dude with a whole bunch of email addresses.
We were talking about this on on Friday, I think. It's your accent. You just have the best accent.
Yeah. It kind of slips out every now and then, doesn't it?
When you get drunk, it gets a little bit deeper and more of a drawl, and that just makes you more entertaining to listen to.
So I should start getting drunk more often is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, we could record. Oh, we don't even have to. You know, we could record a bit later, make it easier to justify having a glass of bourbon with our podcast.
I don't need to justify nothing. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Well, exactly. You don't need to justify anything. It's 5 p.m. somewhere. Also, who cares? Because we're all at home anyway.
Yep.
So these two phones, Andrew, are now out in the world. Not that people who listen to this haven't already learned most there is to know about it, because the phones leaked to hell. But let's go over exactly what OnePlus is launching, when they're going to be available, and what differentiates the OnePlus 8 from the OnePlus 8 Pro, and perhaps against the immediate predecessors, the 7T, 7T Pro, and even the 7 Pro and 7, because OnePlus had a very busy 2019.
Yeah, I think that the important part is that there are just two phones right now, and they're launching at the same time. They're launching, you know, to retail markets within a week of each other. And they're actually a lot more aligned because, like you said, last year was a bit of a, I don't know, unkind word to explain that there were like six or seven distinct models, I think, when you throw in the McLarens and the 5Gs and all that kind of stuff. So you just have the 8 and the 8 Pro. And it's not a 8 and 8 Plus. I think that that's the important distinction. These really are separate devices rather than like the same phone in two sizes, like an S20 and S20 Plus situation. So the Pro gets the new stuff, like a slightly nicer hardware design, new cameras throughout, and wireless charging, whereas the 8 is really more like a refresh 7T in terms of its size, most of the specs, the cameras, the display. So the 8 Pro is kind of the more interesting one from like a what's new standpoint, whereas the 8 is the kind of anchor of the business because, as we'll get to, it's much more affordable and kind of a traditional OnePlus priced phone, whereas the 8 Pro now is much more expensive.
Yeah, and this is interesting because obviously OnePlus has been synonymous with kind of value, right? You've received phones that have the best or close to the best specs for way, way less than the cost of a Samsung Galaxy phone or a high-end Pixel or even an LG phone. And this year, that's still true to some extent, but whereas the 7 Pro started at $669 for the base model, the 8 Pro jumps all the way to $899 for the base model, and OnePlus is calling it their ultra premium flagship. So they're not really trying to sell it as a direct successor to the 7T Pro or the 7 Pro, but rather a whole new category of phone, whereas the 8 is now the flagship, the mainstream phone that it expects most people to buy.
And by making the 8 Pro, this is kind of in a reverse way, by making the 8 Pro so much more expensive, it actually gave OnePlus room to increase the price of the 8 from the 7T. So we're talking only 6 months ago, and it's effectively the same phone. It's $100 more, but it doesn't seem as much because, you know, like you said, the 8 Pro jumped so considerably. And those are for the base models. You have to imagine that the target audience for the 8 Pro wants the higher end specs, and they're probably going to be buying the $999 model, so which gets you 12 gigs of RAM and 256 gigs of storage. So it isn't even really a total barn burner in terms of specs, because you're down at, you know, only 8 gigs of RAM and 128 gigs of storage. But, you know, we do have to note that that's less RAM than you get across the board on the S20 series. That's not usually something we expect from OnePlus phones. Usually they're just, you know, outright just have way more specs than they need across the board. And the upgrade price is usually like $50 to $70. Now we're talking a full $100 jump. And, you know, it's definitely a difference in philosophy this year.
So out of the way, both of these phones have Snapdragon 865 SoCs that bring 5G. We knew that OnePlus was going all in on 5G this year. The company said it all the way back at CES.
And they have to.
And they have to, right? If you want to appeal to the core audience that you've been trying to basically bring into the fold over the last 6 years or so, you cannot launch a high-end phone without the best Qualcomm chip there is. But that comes inevitably, as we've seen across the board, with price bumps. And along with that, there, you know, OnePlus is trying to justify the increased price by focusing on two major tenets that people really care about, or three, if you want to bring sort of a spec that everybody cares about, but not quite as in your face. So the first one we're talking about is the display. So the 8 inherits the same 90 hertz refresh rate panel as the 7 Pro and 7T, but I believe the panel itself is quite a bit better quality than the 7T. So it's a smaller 6.55 inch panel, but it looks fantastic, and it has that left justified hole punch for the selfie camera. It's a very good screen, but the 8 Pro has that 120 hertz refresh rate. It's an amazing AMOLED panel, really, really high quality, and we've already seen and even talked about on this show that it received all the accolades from DisplayMate, but after using it for a week now, Andrew, can you say that it is the best display that you've ever seen?
I'm going to say that it's just neck and neck with the latest Samsung stuff, specifically talking about the 8 Pro. I think that you could hand either one of these to somebody and, you know, cost is no object. Which one do you think is better, or, you know, looks, you know, nicer, smoother to your eyes? You wouldn't really be able to tell them apart aside from, you know, setting them side by side. But, you know, that normal people, or, you know, even, you know, nerds, once they get a phone, you're not putting it side by side. If you just pick the phone up, it looks really, really good. My only issue with it is I just don't like the left justified hole punch for the camera. It just looks a little funky.
It also looks like every other phone released in 2020 so far. You know? It's weird that this is the orientation that a lot of companies are going for. Oppo and OnePlus share a parent company, so the Find X2 Pro basically has the same display, so that's not a surprise. Motorola is releasing the Moto G Power and Moto G Stylus this week, and they also have left justified hole punch displays, which is interesting. Obviously, Samsung has a middle justified or center justified hole punch, which is a little smaller and I think actually better suited for this kind of panel. But overall, I think OnePlus, and they told us this, right? The reason they went with this design over bringing back the mechanical, the vertically raising mechanical selfie camera is because A, it's just more expensive and it adds weight, but B, it makes it harder to seal the phone for an IP rating. And that is something that we're seeing for the first time officially on a OnePlus phone. So walk us through exactly what that means if you plan on buying one of these phones.
Absolutely. And Jerry, please interrupt me at any point if I say something stupid here, but it is a little murky because when we're talking about these ratings, OnePlus has always walked this line. The last couple versions, they've started to add in their own, they've done the water resistance work on the phone, but they don't want to pay to have the official certification done to be able to say that it has the rating. So now they're finally doing that, which when the phone's $100 or $200 more, it should. They're giving the 8 Pro an IP68 rating across the board. The 8 technically does not have that rating when you go to oneplus.com and buy it, or for the first time go to Amazon in the US and buy it directly, which is awesome. But if you do buy the phone from Verizon or T-Mobile, they are going to actually be advertising it as having IP68. We know that the phones are going to be more expensive from the carriers. That's just usually how it goes. And so you can assume that they had some kind of deal. They foot a little bit of the bill. They get to charge more for it, and they actually get the rating. The interesting thing is that the T-Mobile version and the unlocked version, from everything we can tell, are the exact same. OnePlus isn't going to just make the unlocked one, less water resistant or dust resistant than the carrier one. So you can really be confident, I think, that the 8 has the same water resistance as the 8 Pro. But across the board, it's pretty insane that we had to wait this long to get IP68 on these phones. Even when they were a little bit less expensive, it was still a glaring omission before.
You didn't say anything stupid.
Woo! I'll take it.
Okay, Jerry, so IP68. This is the first time, as I said, a OnePlus phone has been ingress protection rated. And that means we have to take for granted that this is water resistant up to 1 meter for 30 minutes. And second, it's totally dust tight. IP67 is 1 meter for 30 minutes. IP68 is extended immersion under high pressure. So there's actually no specific time or depth that it's rated for, but presumably it's more protected than IP67, which is up to a meter, which is weird.
We should hope that, but I don't like IP68 because it doesn't. I could immerse something in an inch of water and claim IP68. It's up to the manufacturer.
So let's talk about the price, though, because OnePlus has always said the reason it doesn't get these phones certified is not that it does not, or at least for the last few generations, it hasn't included proper dust and water resistance, but that it's resisted the cost associated with certifying them. Why would this this certification body charge companies so much that it would add a meaningful amount to each phone sold?
Because they can. I mean, as a consumer, you want to see something certified to be water resistant. You can look back to the first couple Pixels, HTC did it, Motorola did it. They made their phones water resistant, but didn't spend the money to get it certified, and consumer backlash existed because of that. There's, no, I want my phone to be water resistant. And even though you know, there were plenty of YouTube videos that showed how resistant they are that didn't matter. When we buy phones, we are, that's one of the specs we look for, that places a value on that little certification, and the companies that certify it are cashing in on that.
And it really is a psychological benefit, because none of the companies that have IP68 ratings warranty against water damage at all. And carriers don't either. You have, no matter what, you're going to have some sort of an extended warranty plan or extra, you know, in the case of Apple, AppleCare Plus or something, in order to have water damage covered anyway. And they're really, really strict about it. They can check and see if the phone has been immersed in water, and they will deny your warranty claim anyway. So it's more of like an accidental peace of mind kind of rating. That doesn't mean that it's not very useful. And it, you know, that doesn't just lower the barrier for you to continue to use your phone around water, but it doesn't really protect you, you know, as much physically or against having to pay to fix the phone.
But there is no physical difference then between, from what I'm understanding here, if OnePlus is certifying only some, so it's all OnePlus, all OnePlus 8 Pros are IP68 rated, but the OnePlus 8s are all the same, right? We can take
at
for
least
granted
the T-Mobile and unlocked ones, yeah.
Right. Okay. So T-Mobile and unlocked, we have a guarantee from OnePlus itself that they are the same phone, and yet only the carrier versions have the IP certification. So you're paying for a peace of mind that you can convince yourself is the same if you buy the unlocked version. It's just that you don't have the actual number on the spec sheet.
And you don't you don't have any recourse at all if your phone gets damaged by water. If you look in the manual of a phone that's supposed to be water resistant, it'll tell you don't put it underwater. And there are plenty of stories out on the internet of people who had, you know, a water resistant Samsung phone, and Samsung wouldn't repair it because of water damage. That's pretty standard, like Andrew said, but in some states, like California and North Carolina are the two off the top of my head, if it says water resistant on the box and you can find a lawyer that says, you know, this slight bit of water damage should have been covered under that, you can get Samsung to replace your phone if you want to spend $5,000 on a lawyer. So, you know, there is something there.
Okay, so this is good, right? We're moving in the right direction. We have our first OnePlus phone that's water resistant and dust proof. And that's great. Whether you buy the OnePlus 8 or 8 Pro, you know that you're basically protected from both of those elements, which is good because it's raining a lot in parts of the country right now. Second thing we have, which is exclusive to the OnePlus 8 Pro and the first ever on a OnePlus phone, is wireless charging. So,
about
Andrew,
damn time.
This An amazing is wireless 2020. Charging. It's not 2012, which is when we first saw tablets and phones debut with that, you know, Qi wireless charging. But OnePlus has always resisted just adding standard 5 or 10 watt or even 15 watt wireless charging because the CEO, Pete Lau, has always said it's just too damn slow. And they wanted a wireless charging solution that would compete for speed and efficiency with its standard warp charge 30T wired charging solution. So here we have a wireless charging solution called Warp Charge 30 Wireless. And it works a little bit differently, Jerry, than typical fast wired charging, but it does the same thing. It gets your phone to 50% from zero in about 30 minutes. So what's going on here, and how exactly is OnePlus implementing this? Because you wrote a pretty good explainer, and it's not as straightforward as just putting a fan inside a Qi charger and ramping up the voltage.
Which is the Samsung approach.
That was the Samsung approach, and yes, you can get a little bit faster that way. But in the end, the voltage and amperage that's going to your battery over this new wireless charging method is exactly the same as if you had plugged it in on a warp charge charger, which is incredible. And they do it by using a piece of electrical theory that's been around forever called a charge pump. And that doesn't have anything to do with charging. It's just a, you know, idiosyncrasy that it's just called a charge pump. What it does is with DC to DC voltage conversion, you cannot use a transformer. That's just the way electricity works. You have to find other methods to convert from one voltage to another in DC. A charge pump uses capacitors to store voltage and release the voltage at a certain time to get the correct amount of voltage output. You can feed in, you know, 20 volts, and you can output any arbitrary number of voltage volts that you want using capacitors that turn on and off at certain times. Another thing with electrical theory is if you alter one side, like alter the voltage, you up the amperage. If you drop the voltage, the amperage goes up. If you lower the voltage, or if you raise the voltage, the amperage goes down. All electricity works that way. So they feed the phone with 20 volts at 1.5 amps and put it through several charge pumps, and it comes out at, oh, I don't have the numbers right here in front of me, but it's, I think it's 5 volts, 6 amps, just like the warp charge charger, which can charge your battery very fast and very safe. And that's all done on the phone, and there's software inside the phone and inside OnePlus's charger, which is the only charger it will work with. They're in constant communication. They monitor the heat, make sure nothing gets out of spec, and as soon as it reaches a certain level of charge in the battery, or if the temperature would raise past a certain point, it shuts everything down to just, you know, a lower fast charge.
So that's really important. What you just said is important. First of all, this is safe because OnePlus has put all of these restrictions in place that will not put the onus on the phone itself to sort of raise and lower the voltage, right? There's capacitors in the wireless charger itself that's stepping down over, you know, from 20 volts, 1.5 amps. I think it's then 9 volts, you know, whatever, 3 amps, and then 5 volts, 6 amps. And that is what goes into the battery. And that's exactly the same as what you have with Warp Charge 30T. So there's two restrictions here. One is that you need OnePlus's $70 charger to make this happen. Mm-hmm. And two is that the charger has to have a fan because the charger is the one that's generating heat. And that
right.
heat
and
has to
has
go
to
somewhere.
Be, and it has to be a stand. I really don't think they'd be able to dissipate heat properly in a puck style.
Unless it was on legs 2 inches tall. You have to have right. airflow.
So, Andrew, you and I both have this charger. It's a mm-hmm. really good, solid wireless charging stand.
Yeah.
Let's put
really
that out
nice
there.
Really nice-looking charger, too.
It's you know, it's fairly nondescript. And the fan, it's not silent, but it's certainly not loud. Like, you can hear it, but only if you're in a quiet or near silent room and nothing else is happening.
Yeah, it's
but
not going to wake you up in the middle of the night on your bed, you know, bedside table.
But the other thing, Jerry, is that if you decide to turn on sleep mode, it'll charge your phone at a slower speed, and those fans won't turn on, or that fan won't
right.
turn on at all.
Because this whole system is also backwards compatible as a standard Qi charger.
Correct.
And the phones themselves have a charging optimization checkbox where it can follow your routine, and it knows when you go to bed and wake up. Normally, and will actually not charge the phone to full overnight, and will finish the charge right before you wake up as well. So it won't just sit there churning, keeping the phone set at 100%, you know, at 4 a.m.
So what we understand about the OnePlus 8 Pro is that it supports standard 5-watt Qi charging, but it also supports 10-watt extended power profile, or EPP, wireless charging, if you have a charger that supports it. And if EPP sounds familiar, it's because mm-hmm. we really first heard about it with the Pixel 4 last year. Mm-hmm. The Pixel 4 was the first product that we reviewed of any, you know, wide availability that supported EPP. And we had to scrounge around to find those chargers that were compatible. And still, to this day, it's pretty rare. But if you go to the Qi Consortium or Wireless Power Consortium website, you can filter for EPP compatible chargers, or if you just go to Android Central, we'll have a list for you there as well. But for all intents and purposes, any wireless charger will work with this. It just won't be, you know, 50% in 30 minutes, or, you know, it's, I think it's full charge in about an hour and 5 minutes, which is only slightly slower than warp charge.
It is super
30T.
Fast.
So do not worry. It's fantastic.
And I mean, I think, and the big thing is that just like warp charge, that 0 to 50% is particularly fast. Like less than 30 minutes from 0 to 50%.
Yeah, it's 6 amp charging. That's
which is crazy.
And what's important to me is that this was all done in a safe way. Long before Note 7 started to blow up, a lot of people, myself included, have seen what can happen to lithium-ion batteries when you push them too hard during the charging cycle. It's just not a safe thing to have in your pocket at all. That's why companies that make phones are so worried about doing whatever they can to make the battery charging safe. And OnePlus, you know, in retrospect, saying you weren't going to have wireless charging until you could do it right and do it fast, good call. That's what they did here.
At least they ended up doing it. You know what I mean? They didn't say that the whole way and then come out and just support, you know, 10 watt and that's it. You know, they at least did this.
I said charge pumps are an old idea, and they are, but not the way OnePlus is using them in series like this. This is all something new that I've never seen or heard about being used this way before. I'm sure somewhere out there there's a piece of million-dollar equipment that does this, but OnePlus is doing it in a phone that, you know, isn't the most expensive phone out there.
I just have to air two small grievances. One, the cable is not long enough on the charger. And that, I mean, it's only, what would you say, a 3-foot cable?
Yeah, it's not very
long.
And
it's built into the brick and the charging base, which I'm sure is, again, a safety measure. But that's not how, you know, the warp charge wired chargers, you know, have a regular USB-A plug on them. So who knows? But there's no way to extend that at all without another extension cord. That's annoying. Another one is the OnePlus 8 doesn't have it. It's a pro only feature.
Well, I'm good on the all-in-one solution with the brick, the cable, and the stand, because that guarantees that somebody can't go down to the gas station and buy a dollar USB cable.
Yeah, and the nice thing is that, yeah, it does support regular wireless charging. So if you want to use whatever, a Samsung charger and plug in a 10-foot USB cable, like, you know, have at it.
So there are a couple other things that I want to mention, right? I mentioned the Oppo Find X2 Pro and how OnePlus and Oppo share a parent company and how they do share a lot of components. Clearly, the display is a shared component. The main camera sensor, the IMX689, which we'll talk about in a second, is a shared component. Another shared component is the fact that wireless, the Warp Charge 30 wireless is a direct offshoot of Oppo's 30-watt wireless VOOC solution that was announced last September at IFA.
Thank God they have a better name for it.
Yeah, it's not, Oppo is not known for its name, for its branding, but it's certainly known for, you know, its charging innovations. And today, so April 13th, the Oppo Ace 2 5G was announced, and it has 40 watt wireless charging, which is an improvement on the 30 watt. So
bananas.
All that's to say, OnePlus did not develop this on its own. It just took the foundation and improved on it. I don't care. It doesn't matter. I have literally no complaints about this, other than the fact that the charger is a bit expensive. But compared to what, the $100, or how much is the Pixel stand?
Yeah, $99.
$99?
Is it really? Good Lord.
You know, that's a 10-watt wireless charger, and you don't get, I mean, yes, you get that ambient mode or whatever, but now you get that on basically any wireless charger on any Android phone, so it doesn't really matter. This is much better value.
And OnePlus's wired chargers aren't cheap either. I mean, the charger with a cable is, I think, $50. Already, so
yes, but the Samsung's 45 watt you know USB power delivery charger cable combo is also $50.
Yeah.
And if you care about charging your phone quickly, you've got to spend money to do it safely.
Right. Yeah. You're not going to be able to just go get the Anker charging pad off of Amazon that's $17, you know, and charge anything fast.
Right. So. That, the Anker charging pad is safe, but it's slow. There's your difference.
I mean, we also do, you know, want to mention that if you have an existing OnePlus phone, right, if you're upgrading from a OnePlus 6 or a 6T, you will still benefit from the warp charge. You know, back in the 6 and 6T days, there was warp charge 20. Your phone will still charge at that speed if you, you know, have a spare charger lying around from an older OnePlus phone. You do get one of these warp charge 30T chargers in the box, but it doesn't support USB-C power delivery to the same speed as warp charge. So you'll get, I think, 15 or 18 watts from a power delivery charger. But all that's to say, OnePlus owns the whole spec, and that's a good thing for safety, but it can also be expensive if it means you want to buy spare chargers.
Yeah, and that's just one other thing I want to mention, because it just reminds me every time I have a OnePlus phone that I love how fast the, you know, their wired charger is, and it's great that it's in the box, but I don't want to have a separate brick, especially now I have these new Aki GaN chargers that are tiny, and they have 45 watts of PD output, and I can just carry one brick, and it's fast enough to charge my MacBook and my phone. It's like, I'm going to choose to bring that one every single time if I'm only going to bring one charger. And so the OnePlus one's going to get left out because it doesn't PD charge my laptop. So that's just kind of one of the downsides.
All right, let's transition to battery quickly, and then we'll talk about camera, because I think that's the meat of the conversation, right? People want to know, is the OnePlus camera finally up to snuff? So quickly, the OnePlus 8 has a 4,300 milliamp hour battery, which is bigger than the 7T by quite a margin. I think that was 3,800.
Yeah,
so
almost 15%.
How have you been finding the OnePlus 8 battery life, Andrew?
Super, super good. I had a weird bug on my phone, I think, that just came from a restore at first, and I was really worried that the battery life was bad. I did a factory reset up everything exactly as I should have cleanly from the start, and it's amazing. Coming off the weekend, Saturday and Sunday both, I ended the day with 55 and 60% battery left, which is just incredible. And this is running at the 90 hertz refresh rate, auto brightness, like auto everything. OnePlus doesn't do any crazy like battery management. It never shuts down apps in the background. It never delays notifications, anything like that. Everything just works normally, and battery life is incredible. I have it set to automatically turn on battery saver at 20%, which is very conservative. I didn't hit that once, even on a weekday. Doesn't matter. Yes, I have even left my house and gone out on mobile networks, done network testing, gone on long runs with Bluetooth music and all this kind of stuff. No problem at all. It's, you know, what you would expect from taking the 7T and adding almost 15% more battery. It's a really, really strong battery.
And what's really interesting here is, you know, I think we've always sort of seen OnePlus phones as having okay battery life. None of them were ever particularly good. Even the, you know, the flagships like the 7 Pro last year, everybody
had a 7 Pro just
had a little complaint, right? It wasn't great. This year, I think OnePlus has found that nice balance between power efficiency and cell size without making either phone more, larger or heavier, which is really, really appreciated.
How's the Pro been for you? Because I've mostly been using the 8.
Yeah, so one thing I will say is that the Pro comes with 120 hertz on by default, but it also steps down the QHD plus resolution to 1080p. And that's similar to the Galaxy S20 series, except that the Galaxy S20 series, you don't have the option of going QHD and 120. You have to choose one or the other. Here you can do both. I've just chosen to stick with the 1080p resolution because the screen's really good. I don't need the extra pixel density. And I've had very few complaints with the battery. I think yesterday I had the brightness up to 100% while I was taking photos outside. I ended the day with about 10%, but most days I end with 30% left in the tank. And this is a 4,500 milliamp hour battery, which is great. 4510, I believe, is the specific capacity. And again, like, I just don't think about the battery, whereas I did on the 7 Pro, I did on the 6T and 6, and this is just one less thing I have to worry about.
Yeah, it's, and I think the important thing for me is that they don't do anything crazy to try to get there. I mean, I'm sure there's all kinds of optimization happening in the background, but you're not getting these like constant pop-ups about apps running, you know, unnecessarily, or like you have to check this, or here's a battery reminder. Like, you still get those, even on Samsung's phones, even on the latest models that have really good battery life. So it's just really nice that you just don't have to think about it. And even when you do, it charges extremely quickly. So they finally have that sorted out.
And the one thing I will say is a lot of people complain that the 7 Pro and 7T Pro were just too heavy. They were very bulky, very heavy phones that were uncomfortable to use in one hand. Even though the 8 Pro is only 7 grams lighter, the 8 Pro is 7 grams lighter than the 7 Pro, I find that to be enough that I don't really think about the weight of this phone, even though it's slightly taller because it has a 19.8:9 aspect ratio. I feel like you're in the same boat as me, right?
Yeah, it's odd that 200 gram line is like kind of the barrier between a phone feeling overtly heavy and not. And of course, it's the size and the shape and the weight all kind of together. But I agree. When I took it out of the box, I thought it felt considerably lighter, but it's less than 10 grams difference.
Yeah.
Of course, the smaller 8, you know, by comparison, just feels really nice. It's a little bit smaller than a Pixel 4 XL and a Galaxy S20 Plus, and a little bit lighter as well, I believe. It's 180 grams. So that thing feels, you know, feather light by comparison. But there's no getting around that the 8 Pro is really big. But maybe it's just the fact that we've kind of become desensitized to these giant phones. But they struck a really good balance of the shape and the weight.
Yeah, it's slightly taller and wider and heavier than the Galaxy S20 Plus. So if you've picked one of those phones up, or you've seen a friend with that phone, that's basically the rubric, or the landmark that you can use. All right, let's talk about the cameras. So the camera setup on the 8 Pro is very similar to that of the 7 Pro, but there are two major improvements. The first is that the primary sensor is just massive now. It's 1/1.4 inches, which is about the same size as the sensor inside the Galaxy S20 series, not the Ultra, which has an even larger sensor. And this is just a very big Sony IMX sensor. It's a 64 megapixel sensor, I believe, which means that it downsamples to 12 megapixels. And the photos that I've gotten have been pretty good, right? Nothing mind-blowing, but they've been really, really good, especially in low light. The performance has been, you know, pun intended, night and day difference over the previous OnePlus phones that I've used. What do you think, Andrew?
I haven't shot with the Pro as much, so I won't put my foot down on the Pro. So if you want to close that out before I switch to the 8, then I'm happy to talk about that separately.
Yeah, okay. So obviously with the larger sensor, you have that really nice bokeh that comes with it.
Noticed that.
f/1.78 aperture. So, you know, similar to the Galaxy S20 series, you get really nice natural bokeh. It can be overwhelming. The shallow depth of field is hard to work with sometimes. I've shot things that I thought were in focus, and then I look at on a larger screen and it turns out they aren't. But that's not a huge problem. The main thing for me is just that this is a much larger sensor, and along with the multi-frame improvements of the new ISP inside the Qualcomm Snapdragon 865, it just gets you better photos almost every time. There still are some OnePlus quirks that you'll find. The software isn't quite as polished as I would like for a release, you know, a phone that's about to be released in a couple of weeks, but it's not a huge problem. And the wide angle sensor is very good. It's actually the same sensor as the main sensor in the OnePlus 7 Pro. So the photos that you take with the wide angle camera are fantastic. Unfortunately, the telephoto, the 3X telephoto, is still not good. It's like capital not good. It's a 12 megapixel sensor that's being that's cropping to 8 megapixels. So it does have it's sort of what Samsung's doing with the Galaxy S20 series, where you're getting more information and then cropping in to get you a lossless 3X photo. But it's just not a good sensor, and that is a problem, because when you go from the main sensor, which is a really high quality part, to the telephoto, you just lose a lot of detail. The white balance is always wrong compared to the main sensor. And
So just like the 7 series.
Yeah, it's just slow. It's the OIS isn't great. And overall, I just think that OnePlus cheaped out when it came to the telephoto. And that's really unfortunate, because everything else about the camera is greatly improved.
I like the changes that they've done with AI. AI helps cameras immensely. I mean, look at the pixels that came with one lens that took better pictures than everything else out there for, what, 3 or 4 years. But OnePlus, one of the things I guess is endearing, they're using AI to detect dogs and cats so they can optimize the shutter speed and stuff to get a good picture of your dog running around, which is cool. And that's a good use of AI. People love their cats. But what I like more is there's now a sensor that detects what they call flicker. Different lights flicker at different speeds. They all flicker so fast that our eyes can't see it. But, you know, an incandescent bulb flickers at one speed, a fluorescent at another, an LED at a different, you know, speed. But now they can detect that, and AI will adjust the shutter speed so it's in sync and it matches, and you won't get weird scan lines in your photos.
Yeah, the Pixels have that. That's a really interesting low-key feature that I found useful on the Pixel 3 and 4.
Yep.
You know, notably the Pixel 3a didn't have that, and people were like, oh wait, I see blur in these, you know, in these photos again. Google didn't really talk about that in the Pixel 4 or Pixel 3, but you know, I think it's just, it comes with the module, basically. Like you can buy a part with it or not, and OnePlus chose to put it in there.
But I'm sure it makes a big difference, especially indoors.
Yeah, I mean, look, indoor photography is really hard, and yep. Having a larger sensor is just better this year, because you can keep the shutter speed pretty fast, and you can ramp up the light sensitivity and not get a ton of grain. You know, OnePlus it's known for grainy photos, and it's not really gone this time around, but you can take for granted that you're going to get a better photo from the OnePlus 7 or OnePlus 8 Pro than you could from any previous OnePlus phone.
So I'll mirror, I think, a lot of the same, what would you say, tenets of what the 8 Pro are just carried over with the same kind of processing and color science and everything on the 8. It's just done on the same 48 megapixel sensor that was in the 7T. Did the 7 Pro also have the same sensor?
Yeah, same sensor. 7 right. Pro, 7T, 7T Pro, all the same primary
right, for
sensor.
The main. And so daylight photos, normal indoor photos with no movement are all really good. And I do like OnePlus's colors in terms of, they just kind of, we talked about this with the LG V60. They're kind of just natural. They don't seem to, you know, go overboard too much. HDR doesn't go crazy and, you know, add a bunch of, you know, like super, super blue skies or bring up the shadows a ton and crush them. On the other hand, there are some limitations you can see in this sensor that's not the highest end sensor. The dynamic range is not amazing. There were some situations with very strongly side lit or backlit scenes that the camera just couldn't get the brightness correct on the subject, and it really just got blown out and overwhelmed even with HDR. At night, I think Daniel and I had, we had previously talked about this, that the nighttime photos still tend to be a little soft and a little grainy. Like, they just don't keep their sharpness on either phone as much. They're fine. They're passable, but Nightscape, which is their night mode, is really tuned toward, you know, what it sounds like landscapes and cityscapes and things like that. It's not really a Google Night Sight competitor. It usually just brightens a photo without adding a ton of extra grain or anything, which is nice sometimes. But for the most part, I found that just taking night shots in auto was the best way to go. And Nightscape didn't really help a ton. I'm really happy with this camera as far as a $700 phone goes. It makes a lot of sense that they would use something better and more capable in the 8 Pro when you're charging $900 or more. But this is kind of the $700 price point is kind of the ceiling for where I accept this level of quality. I expect to see something better on a higher end phone. The big downside and, you know, really upsetting thing for me is that they took out the telephoto camera, which wasn't great on the 7T, but it was there. And they replaced it with this macro sensor that's just terrible. There's no other way to put it. It's a 2-megapixel macro behind a macro lens with an f2.4 aperture. And so you just don't get any good photos, no matter what. F2.4 doesn't produce good bokeh, which is what you want on a macro shot. You don't get enough resolution to, you know, look at the crisp details. When you're talking about 2 megapixels, you're getting really up close to something, and then you get a grainy photo. It just makes no sense at all. I really would have preferred that they just, I don't know, left it off or just left us with a really basic zoom camera, because digitally zooming on the 48 megapixel camera is not great either. 2x is passable. Anything beyond that is a waste of time. So that's kind of your downside, is even though I know that telephoto is not great on the Pro, it's way better than digital zooming on this 48 megapixel and a macro camera that's useless.
Yeah, I agree. I found that to be a weird change, and I think they did it for cost-cutting reasons. I do want to correct myself. The Galaxy S20 and 20 Plus have a 1/1.76-inch sensor, which is quite a bit smaller than the one in the OnePlus 8 Pro. So you do get a larger surface area to capture photos. The one on the Galaxy S20 is 12 megapixels, so the actual pixel sizes are slightly larger, but when you're binning, the OnePlus 8 Pro wins, you know, handily. And, you know, I agree with you, Andrew. I think just taking photos in auto mode in the dark are better because they don't go through the same lightening process as photos that go through Nightscape. I think the advantage on the 7 or the 8, the standard 8, is probably, you know, greater, just given the sense that you have smaller pixels to work with. But I don't necessarily think it's true of the 8 Pro. I have a few photos that show that difference in my review, if you want to check out androidcentral.com. But overall, I just think this is a great improvement. The 8 Pro does have a couple of things in addition to the larger main sensor and improved wide angle that this 8 doesn't. It has a 5-megapixel color filter camera, which is strange because it only works in an explicit color filter mode that you have to enable in the app. And the actual filters are kind of garbage. They don't really give you anything that you wouldn't get from an Instagram filter. It just does it natively.
And some of them are duplicated in software on the 8, which doesn't have the color filter camera.
Right, exactly. It seems like a waste of money, or they just needed a fourth camera to put in there, and they found this one lying around. I would not use it. It's in the top right corner of the camera app if you're interested. You get matte, vivid, black and white, and then something called photochrome, which is sort of, it combines colors in the foreground with black and white. It is nice that you get a native black and white mode that you can get from, you know, the phone itself rather than doing it in post, but I really don't think it's going to be a popular setting.
For now.
Sorry, go ahead, Jerry.
I would say for now, that's something that a update to the camera software could bring 100 more filters.
Sure. I mean, if they made it, if they opened an API and people wanted to go crazy with it, absolutely. Or they, you know, they started an API and gave it to Visco, and Visco could say, oh, we're giving you exclusive, you know, access to the camera, to the color filter camera in the Visco app when you buy a OnePlus phone. That would be very cool, but it does not seem like OnePlus is going to go that far.
Unfortunately.
And the other thing is that instead of a dedicated macro sensor like there is on the 8, there is just a macro mode that comes with the wide-angle camera on the 8 Pro. So I think you get the same quality. In fact, you get better quality because you're
definitely
starting
better
at a 48-megapixel sensor, and it just uses the autofocus to get really close. So,
and it's really weird because the 7T had a macro mode using the telephoto. So this really just screams of cost cutting and parts bin specials on the camera.
Yes.
They should have just left it out.
Okay, so let's talk sort of availability, price, things like that, because this is a really complicated rollout. So starting April 22nd,
sadly,
the OnePlus 8 Pro will be available from OnePlus.com. And it starts at $899, but the base has been increased to 8 gigabytes of RAM and 128 gigs of storage. And then the step up from that is $999, and that is 12 gigabytes of RAM and 256 gigs of storage. So we finally reached $1,000 for a OnePlus phone, Andrew. I know you haven't spent a lot of time with it, but $899 is an expensive phone objectively. It's also a lot less money than most phones that have the same feature set. So what's your take on whether this is still a value flagship compared to phones like the Galaxy S20 Plus, which are $300 more?
Yeah, so that's the thing. It's anchored, this like flagship area is anchored by the Samsung launch that, you know, put the floor at $1,000 for the smaller phone and have this ultra version that came out at $1,400. And so it makes this OnePlus 8 Pro look like a pretty good deal. We're talking $200 to $300 less than the S20 Plus. And those are really comparable phones. And there are lots of areas where the OnePlus phone wins. The wireless charging is way faster. You can say that the hardware, you know, has a little more of a distinct look. The software, I would argue, is better than Samsung's in terms of speed, performance. The battery life is right on par. So, you know, when you do compare to, you know, that competition, yeah, it's a really good value. I think the question really is, do OnePlus phone buyers have that, you know, elasticity in their wallet to go to a higher end phone when historically they really haven't been? We're talking about just 18 months ago, 2 years ago, their phones were $600, and now we're at $900 or $1,000.
Right, and the OnePlus 7 Pro, even though it had only 6 gigs of RAM, and there was no 5G, it started at $669. So this is like a 35% price bump over that for the immediate successor. But then you have to think, OnePlus is not positioning this as a successor to the 7 Pro, even though it is called the 8 Pro. It's very confusing, and I don't know if the intent is going to be successful here, especially if you look at the OnePlus 8 at $699 as the direct successor, not to the 7 Pro, but to the 7T, which itself cost $599 when it debuted. Talk about that, whether you think the OnePlus 8 is worth its $699 asking price.
Yeah, this is the really weird thing, is we asked OnePlus if they're going to continue to sell the 7T, and they said yes. Who knows for how long or through which channels and which markets? That's obviously going to, you know, change depending on where you are. But I would fully recommend that if the OnePlus 7T is still on sale, to just buy that. The 8 is a really, really good phone if it's your only less expensive OnePlus option. But the 7T is, in day-to-day usage, exactly the same. There, and you know, in some cases, it's a little bit better in terms of the camera having the dedicated telephoto camera, etc. But in general, the big thing is that the OnePlus 7T is $500. And that's a hell of a deal when you look at the 8 being $700. And we'll talk about the 5G stuff, I guess, coming off of this. But that's really your only big differentiator on the 8 level is that, yeah, this has a Snapdragon 865 and 5G, but it doesn't even have universal 5G compatibility. And where you get it and what carrier you use it on could really make an even bigger case for you to just buy the 7T and use it on 4G.
There's one other thing that it has that nobody ever thinks about, except me, I guess. It also has another year's worth on the contract with Qualcomm to keep the phone updated.
Sure, sure.
To me, that's worth $200. You know, is that worth $200 to you? That's something you need to decide.
Well, then we have to look at the competition. So I'll give you two examples. And, you know, yes, we're talking about MSRP versus sales price, but OnePlus rarely discounts their phones throughout the year unless we're preparing for a new phone launch. But right now, you can get the Pixel 4 XL on sale starting at $599 for the 64 gig version and $699 for the 128 gig version. So that's a pretty good deal for a phone that we like a lot. It has its problems, but we like it. On the flip side, the Galaxy S20 Plus right now is $1,000 on Amazon. So it's $200 off its MSRP, and it's the same price yep. as the 256 gigabyte version of the OnePlus 8 Pro. So you have to decide if you are in the market for, you know, spending $1,000, should you buy the Galaxy S20 Plus or should you buy the OnePlus 8 Pro? And honestly, I don't know which one I would recommend. That is a really tough question because spec for spec, they're almost identical. And Samsung is better in some respects and OnePlus is better in others. And to be honest, it's a wash. And that's the first time I can say that about a OnePlus phone.
And that's exactly where OnePlus wants to be right now.
Yeah, I think it's a really good place to be. It also means that it's somewhat undermining or even betraying that early mantra, that early, you know, corporate promise of keeping its prices lower than the competition. Because yes, again, we're talking discounted prices versus MSRP, but we're still seeing an apples to apples comparison for the first time really ever, straight out of the box. And that's a really different place for OnePlus to be.
And they clearly believe that a lot of their technology and especially their software stands on its own as really high quality, in the lead in a lot of respects, at any price. And, you know, they're really putting their money where their mouth is there. You can easily argue that Oxygen OS is the best Android software experience out there. And they're giving you that on, you know, the OnePlus 8. You know, yes, it's more expensive, but it's still only $700. You know, for a lot of people, they're willing to, you know, chop down on some of the extra features and maybe they don't care about wireless charging, whatever. And you still get the same software experience. And that's really valuable.
Okay, so let's talk carrier situation, 5G, stuff like that. So the OnePlus 8 Pro is not going to be available on any carriers in the US, which is, for now at least, which is kind of weird. But I guess the carriers want OnePlus at a lower price. The OnePlus 8 is going to be available where, Andrew?
Okay, so first of all, it's launching a week later than the 8 Pro. So the 8 Pro already takes the, you know, is out there a week earlier. But you can buy it unlocked. You can get Amazon or OnePlus on the 29th of April. And then we don't know the exact timing because carriers love to keep this stuff, you know, lock down until it's official. It's going to be at Verizon and at T-Mobile. We kind of expected the T-Mobile thing, you know, because they've partnered, you know, a lot. But the Verizon one hit me out of left field. I was not expecting that because they haven't even worked together on anything, let alone launching a phone. So that's kind of cool. And the big thing there is that the unlocked 8 and 8 Pro will not work on Verizon's 5G network whatsoever. It just doesn't have millimeter wave, and so it just won't work. Verizon's version obviously will have, excuse me, millimeter wave, and so like that's the only way to do it, and that's a big deal for Verizon people. But on the other hand, that's the only phone that will have millimeter wave. So even the T-Mobile version that T-Mobile sells will not support T-Mobile's millimeter wave network. It'll only support sub-6 5G, which has the biggest footprint by a long shot in terms of network availability. But with Sprint's, the acquisition of Sprint coming in, millimeter wave is going to become more and more important for T-Mobile's 5G network overall, using both sub-6 and millimeter wave. And it just doesn't have it, which seems like a really weird omission to me, on top of the fact that the 8 Pro is not going to be available from any carrier.
Yeah, it's interesting here. Like, if you're on AT&T, you just won't get 5G on either of these phones.
Nope.
AT&T hasn't certified and probably won't certify either of them. And it does seem like Samsung is the only company, really, that is investing in phones with both millimeter wave and sub-6 on the same device. So if you want to get millimeter wave and sub-6, basically, if you want a phone that will work on T-Mobile 5G on all of its, and Sprint on all of its frequencies, you should get the Galaxy S20 Plus or Ultra.
That's pretty amazing, actually, when you think about it. Like, that's an unlocked phone you buy directly from Samsung or Amazon. You put any of the SIM cards in it and it works on their entire 5G network. That's pretty great.
That changes in 2 months when they repurpose all that mid-band. So
when
T-Mobile repurposes all that Sprint mid-band, like, you know, that's going to happen right away.
Yeah, I mean, T-Mobile is not going to emphasize millimeter wave for a long time because it just doesn't have as much as Verizon and AT&T, and it's not as useful because Sprint's 2500 megahertz spectrum is basically 5G gold, and it's the reason
massive.
It spent $28 billion or whatever on this acquisition.
Daniel, that joke was just for you. I said it's going to happen right away.
Oh, sorry. It will, though. I mean, already you could get sub-6 Sprint on T-Mobile's network in, like, Philadelphia, or at least on, like, some street in Philadelphia somewhere.
All right, I'm never telling a joke again. I'm done.
I know. Look, it's the thing is that joking about 5G is hard because it's just very,
it is
very
the
disappointing.
Joke. But so that really just goes down to my explanation of, you should, if you're looking at the 8, really just consider the 7T and save yourself a couple hundred dollars, because you're chasing, like, don't chase 5G on the 8. It should have it. That's cool. It's going to be there. It's, I mean, having Verizon on board, like, they're going to sell a lot of phones, I'm sure, at that price point, because it's going to slot underneath Samsung, and, like, they're going to do their own thing. The common person that buys a OnePlus phone is probably on T-Mobile. I think they have probably the biggest attachment rate. And either that or they're on AT&T or one of the associated MVNOs under either one of those. And, like, just put the SIM card in it and use LTE. You're probably going to be fine. You're not, you know, that's one of the things you're okay just giving up. You know, this whole 5G situation is still really, really muddy. And launches like this are not helping people understand.
Oh, wow. That's a lot.
I just think the whole Verizon thing is, my God, how many times have we heard people beg for this to happen? I think since the OnePlus 3.
Oh, sure.
So there it is, guys. You've been wanting it. And, you know, I think if Verizon is willing to push the phone, you go in there, you can get a Galaxy S20 for $24 a month. If you can get a OnePlus 8 for $19 a month, they're going to sell a ton of these at the Verizon store.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this is going to be official, but the phone's going to be more expensive on Verizon.
Of course.
probably $100 more expensive. We're not sure if that's because it's a slightly different SKU or what they're doing, but it's still going to be cheaper. They're going to be able to sit it there at $800 and it's going to look a lot better. And so, yeah, I bet they will move a lot of them. I just don't think it's going to be moving a lot of them to your traditional OnePlus buyer.
No,
the Venn diagram of OnePlus fans and Verizon customers is two distinct circles.
I actually think the way these are priced and how they're rolling out with the Pro being that expensive, the traditional OnePlus buyer may end up looking elsewhere this year.
Yeah, but ooh. I mean, that's the thing, is that there is, it's like there's no traditional OnePlus buyer that OnePlus doesn't want to make up for in a previous iPhone or Samsung.
Oh, owner, definitely.
Right?
You know, this is a smart move by OnePlus.
There's way more to gain from trying to appeal to a much larger mainstream audience here, going through the traditional carrier channels. And now that, you know, it's on two of the three major networks in the U.S., that's a big deal, especially if you can say it's a 5G phone that costs $700. You know, LG did the same thing with the V60 this year. That's why there is no unlocked version of the V60. It's because LG's saying, we can give you, hey carriers, like we can give you a $799 5G phone and you can push it and put as many pieces of bloatware on it as you want. And that's exactly what's going to happen. So
yeah,
the difference is that OnePlus phones are not going to come with 29 or 38 pieces of bloatware the way that a V60 does. So that's one thing you can take for granted.
And the software will be better, you know, in the end, no matter what.
Exactly. Finally, let's talk colors. So this is an interesting year for OnePlus. Both the OnePlus 8 and OnePlus 8 Pro have the standard Onyx black. It's glossy. It's kind of fingerprinty. I don't recommend
get that
it
one.
Unless you are definitely going to get a case. But there's this glacial green color that OnePlus has been teasing. It's on both versions, and you have it on the 8 Pro. And mm-hmm. I like it a lot. I think it's beautiful. What do you think?
I think it's really nice. You just have to understand that because it's matte, like both the glass on the back and the metal on the sides is matte, it's much more slippery than any of the glossy ones. And this is something we've seen with other OnePlus phones that did the matte thing. LG's done it. I think Xiaomi's done it a couple times. It resists fingerprints, but that also means it resists your fingers and it will want to slide around. The nice thing is that the 8 Pro comes with a clear case in the box, which is kind of cool. So you at least, you know, you get to show off the matte color, but you could use a clear case, which is neat. But I would still take the matte one over a glossy one, no matter what.
I 100% agree. So on the differences, there's one difference between both models. The smaller OnePlus 8 has the interstellar glow, which is this kind of aura glow,
also known as Galaxy Note 10.
Yeah, it's a little on the nose, but it's really nice. And when it hits the light at a certain angle, you get these pinks and purples that are really pretty, but it's very, very glossy, very fingerprinty, and you're probably going to want a case for it anyway.
So
you'll take it out, you'll look at it in the light every once in a while and be like, oh, that's nice, and then put it right back in the case.
And OnePlus's reviewer phones were sent out with the new version of the Sandstone case. I got one in a turquoise greeny color that actually kind of matches the new phone color, and it is really, really nice. OnePlus's Sandstone finish is so cool. And it has kind of these ridges and like little scallops ridges on the sides that are really easy to hold on to. It's just a really nice case. It's probably going to be, you know, $40 or whatever, overpriced per usual, but it's really nice.
Yeah, OnePlus is, they do a good job with their first party cases. I will give them that. Okay, Last thing is the OnePlus 8 Pro has ultramarine blue color, which is a little bit darker and more matte than the version that launched with the OnePlus 7 Pro, rather. And I like that one, but if I had a choice, I would go with the green, because green is the new it color for 2020, apparently.
It's really nice. I like the green a lot. I'm really excited in general to switch to the 8 Pro here when now that the review is up, just to, you know, get that balance. And part of that is that matte finish, getting rid of all those fingerprints.
Final thoughts about either of these phones, Andrew?
Read our reviews. I'm looking forward to seeing what everybody else thinks about the price increases. That's kind of the big thing. Like, do the nerds freak out? Do the normal people finally hear about what OnePlus phones are? Mm-hmm. They're both really good phones, but per usual, they're not without a little bit of controversy in the enthusiast realm.
Yeah, I mean, my perspective, I think that the OnePlus 8 Pro is probably the best overall Android phone you can buy from a cost to features to specs ratio. You know, it's not cheap, but if you are going to pay upwards of $1,000, you might as well save yourself a few hundred dollars and get the 8 Pro. Unless the Galaxy S20 series is on sale, or if you really just want a no BS camera, get the Pixel 4 XL. Because again, like, there's the Huawei P40 Pro, there's the Samsung Galaxy S20 Ultra, all of these other phones come close, but you cannot get a better camera right now than the Pixel 4 XL. So there's still that. But I mean, just a couple of final thoughts about these phones. The haptics are still really good. They haven't been improved over last year. In fact, they may have received a bit of a downgrade. If you want to find more about that, read my review. The speakers, dual speakers, are fantastic, really loud. Good. And
really loud.
I really like them. And the fingerprint sensor seems to be the same as the one in the 7 Pro, which is great because it doesn't really need improvement. It just works.
Still better than Samsung's.
Amen. All right. That's pretty much it for us this week. If you have any feedback, if you want to let us know about what you think of these OnePlus phones, email us at podcast@androidcentral.com. Again, read our reviews on the website. Read Andrew's thoughts at Andrew Martinick on Twitter. Jerry is at GB Hill. All of his smart words are up on the site right now, so go read them. And we will be back later this week. So just a little bit of a note here. We have 3 podcasts coming out this week. 2 of them are interview podcasts, so stay tuned. One is an interview with somebody from OnePlus. We're going to talk about all of these OnePlus phones in great detail with a member of the OnePlus team, so please stay tuned for that. And we also have an interview with somebody from Motorola talking about the Moto G line that is going to be released later this week. So lots of ACP for you coming to your feeds. All right, that's it.
We'll be back next soon. Week with the OnePlus 8T Pro McLaren 5G edition announcement.
Thank you, AI 8K 5G.
Make it stop.
That's it. See you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.